Welcome to the latest podcast of Paid.
Nope.
Anytime.
Anytime.
We can, as long as we get the beginning right, I don't care about the rest of it.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Paige Bacon Podcast, where we talk about everything and anything related to the written word. I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And today, we ain't messing around, cowpokes. We're going to hit the ground running with a very special musical guest performing for you live in my Northeast Portland living room. So without further ado, the famous Haydel sisters.
Howdy, y'all.
Howdy,
y'all.
Howdy.
You know, it's a privilege to play in a living room. It smells a lot better than the most places we play.
It really is, and I can see everybody's faces, and that makes me feel a lot more comfortable. My name's Maybelle Haydel, and I'm here with my older sister, Maddie Haydel.
Howdy, y'all.
We're the famous Haydel sisters, and we'd like to play a song of ours. It's a new song, not one of the ones from back in the old days, but this is a new song that was inspired by spending a little too much time listening to contemporary top 40 country music radio. Now, you see, back in our day, back when we were on the charts, you know, country music used to mean something. It used to have soul. It used to have content. And now every other song is just another male singer singing about women wearing tight clothing.
I know. And here's the irony is that the very same men that sing about their women in their tight clothing, if you are a woman such as myself, that your clothing just feels tight no matter what your best efforts are.
It's a podcast, we can tell.
They don't want any of that.
So this is our song about that situation from the woman's point of view. It's called The Girl with the Painted On Jeans.
I dedicate this to my love of butter.
That girl, I can tell the way she moves her hips and saunters down the road and gives her waist a little twist. That girl has the perceptive intellect and technical acuity of an artist. Well, that's what boys would say whenever I would take a stroll. I can tell that they appreciate my poetic soul. So, hey, boy, if you like what you see, how about you try your hand at some artistic philanthropy? I make it look so easy, but it's harder than it seems. So sit tight, baby, while I paint on these jeans. Each stroke of that dripping wet brush, from the hem around my ankles to the pockets on my tush, shows off my artistic chops. Round my waist I call it still life with the muffin top. I'm the denim Picasso, expressive through and through. Take a look around my crotch, oh, this period is blue. I sketch a more detailed close-up than O'Keefe has ever seen. So sit tight, baby, while I paint on these jeans. I can tell that you marvel how I got them on so tight. Did you notice the 3D perspective on each cellulite? Every contoured curve that's bulging off my hips exemplifies my reputation as a photorealist.
But hey, boy,
you don't need an art history lecture. This gallery's open for a serious collector. Just take one more moment to observe each lumpy line, 'cause you're about to learn. You are my turpentine. Thank you.
Well, all right. That was Maddie on bass and Maybelle Haydel is strumming on the sixth string. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank
you. Now, to let you all in on probably the worst kept secret in the greater Northwest, the famous Haydel sisters are actually one of the of numerous alter egos of the indisputably talented comedy writing duo of Donna Yarborough.
Hello.
And hi. Sadie Bowman.
Hi.
Who are kind enough to shoot the breeze with us this fine day. Again, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Happy to be here.
We totally just, you guys couldn't see it, but we just like ripped open our shirts to reveal our secret identity.
Yeah.
We had like totally different costumes on underneath.
I had to check the breeze I was shooting.
We were fortunate enough to catch the famous Haydel sisters headline at the Jacked Up Variety Show last week, and we were not disappointed.
Nope.
It was a serious night of some old-fashioned vaudevillian comedy. So what on earth possesses two seemingly rational ladies to get up on stage and risk drawing fire from a room full of drunken strangers?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I never thought about it that way.
Here's my thing. And we were recently talking with, for other purposes, we were talking with a little local Portland celebrity Tony Starlight.
Name dropper.
Oh, he's so good. Very much a name dropper. God bless him. God bless him. And, you know, talking about what we do and the things that we do. And when you've got something that's not exactly categorizable, mm-hmm. you've got to create your own scene for it, basically. Mm-hmm. So the variety show allows us to just bring together a real hodgepodge of folks. And that's part of the fun of it, is that they don't have to be people like us. We don't necessarily want people that are doing what we're doing. We just want people doing what they do. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the audience gets their brain cramped a little bit, because that's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I find, at least with my group Peachy Chicken, when we do our first Friday improvisationals, where you've actually opened for us, thank mm-hmm. you again, mm-hmm. That it's nice to have that cross-pollinization of different variety of people coming to see one faction of an act, and then they get to be exposed to you. So you're being exposed to new people, and mm. they're exposing new people to you.
Yeah. And yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to talk a little bit about how just grateful I am for the opportunities in this community and other communities I've lived in, that people are just people who are willing to kind of give things a shot that are not traditional, like your traditional play-going public would not really know what to do with us, but we like to give them that that opportunity to figure it out. Because, like, my background is in theater arts, and I have never felt really comfortable in that environment, like going to auditions and getting headshots and waiting for calls of being cast and all that stuff, and just, like, I would rather just do my own thing because it doesn't really fit into what everybody else is doing. So it is awesome, you know, stuff like what you guys are doing to just like enable that kind of experimentation. And
so how did you guys get the original inspiration for these characters?
Well, in many projects I'm involved in, there's a certain element of what am I going to pull out of my ass today involved. And that's kind of what happened when we first got this going. Back, we have another dear friend of ours, somebody you know, a fellow named Kirk Kievert. I am just dropping the names today. I knew him from back when I was still living in Texas. I was doing improv with Comedy Sports in Texas with Kirk. And even before that, Kirk Kievert was my 8th grade Sunday school teacher, which may only blow a couple people's minds. But you can see the look of shock in this room. You'd understand.
Small world.
Right there. But I had moved out to Portland, and Kirk Kievert, you know, contacted me and said, I have a friend named Sadie that's moving out there, and you two should totally meet. And that's what I heard, and I was vaguely aware that Sadie was in town.
Yeah, and I was getting ready to move to Portland, and he's like, Portland Comedy Sports is my family. I love those guys, and you got to meet these people. And he named off all these people that I needed to meet. But, you know, who listens to your friends in cases like that? So, yeah, it took us a while to actually figure out who each other was.
Yeah. And there's, look.
Wow, look at that.
That's getting the call.
It's live.
Live in the living room.
That was the call. That was the call to action, if we were speaking in Joseph Campbell terms.
But we never get calls on the landline.
Yeah.
Except today.
Yeah, of course it happened today. So
they'll hang up eventually.
Just push the button.
I know.
Not
I
now.
Already did.
Click.
We're not home.
Yeah.
So yeah, eventually we, you know, short story long, we finally got together, and then Donna had... We're being upstaged.
Sorry, there's an answering machine going on in the
background. It's Ron's mom.
It's my mom.
That's hilarious.
Name dropper.
Well, a little bit is that before we decided to do this, I had started doing a couple shows where I was trying to play some original music. My problem is I can't play guitar for shit, and I'm kind of lazy. So when we had talked about maybe doing something, and I was like, oh, okay, what do we want to do?
And is it my imagination? But I remember having a conversation before this opportunity came up, about how, like, stuff that we used to do that we weren't doing anymore. Just like how we kind of were sort of working creative jobs, but weren't really indulging in our own creativity and just really kind of missing that mm-hmm. sense of accomplishment of actually making something of your own. And so she had this date lined up.
Yeah, I had I got a night for a show, and I was like, oh, that's 2 weeks away. You want to do something? Sure. Mm-hmm. I have some old comedy country songs.
I also have some old comedy country songs. I kind of still like them.
So you guys have both already written like comedy country songs.
Yeah.
So a good core of our stuff was stuff that we had written like 10 years before we met each other.
Yeah.
So and really then, your only prep was coming up with these characters.
Oh, and learning to play the bass guitar.
Oh, okay.
But that's part of where the characters came from, mm-hmm. is they're like, I can't, you know, literally a week and a half before the gig, I'm like, can I figure out how to play a bass guitar? And we haven't played these songs in a long time. Mm-hmm. I believe.
And
you
someone were, we wrote, I mean, we did write some songs.
We did write a couple of new songs for that. And it was like, oh gosh, how are we going to cover up the fact that our skills are really rough? Well, what if... this is our first time to play together in 20 years. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how
the
it's...
reunion.
Yeah.
And it's a great so
then
stick.
We had,
it works
we had
so well.
Awesome time. I love this part of the process. We just like look, we went on Google and we're like, what were the headline events of 1993? Just 20 years, you know, this was in 2013. Mm-hmm. So that was like half of what informed our characters. We're like, oh yeah, David Koresh and the Branch Davidians. Oh yeah, Lyle Lovett ran off with Julia Roberts. Oh yeah, all this and all this and all this. And that was kind of how we built the world that these characters came from.
Yeah.
What was the longest time you guys ever had to stay in character?
Oh, well, you know, we haven't had to do much as Haydel. I have quite a good deal of experience of staying in character for many hours because I used to work Geek Alert Renaissance Festivals for Hello. Many years. So, you know, staying in character for 12 hours, psh, no big deal.
No problem.
I mean, you're exhausted by the end of the weekend, but that. So I hoped... I actually had a dream of trying to make it more where Maddie and Maybelle were really entirely separate entities from Donna and Sadie. But it's difficult when you don't draw people into your own environment and say, this is my world, accept this how it is. When you're going into other people's worlds, it's really hard for them to wrap their brain around the fact of, oh, you're not you, you're these people.
We did have some really fun open mic experiences in
yes,
the early
we
days.
Did.
We would go to
the Firkin
Tavern and we would just commit to it. Like we would get dressed up and we would just walk in and it's all these white guys playing guitar and then us. And we're just speaking with accents and we've got like, I would do my hair. You guys can't see it, but I do my hair as big as I can possibly make it. And mm-hmm. she wears this hat and these sunglasses yep. and we just wouldn't drop it. And it was really fun.
It is fun. And when we can get to do it, I love to stay in character for this. It's empowering.
You guys do well staying in character. Is there a character arc you guys have planned out for this at all?
Beyond?
Well, because I mean, you know, now you've been playing together for a while, mm-hmm. Except for whenever you go play some new town, you can go with the, this is the first time in 20 years mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That remains to be seen. I think because we've had other projects and we're still trying to get the initial word of Haydel Sisters out, which is always the challenge with something like this. We're kind of at a holding point, but I have a feeling as the next wave of creativity and the next demand for it starts to open up, that's when the new next level, the new what is happening with the Haydels will kind of come into existence.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm guessing I know your answer already, Donna, since you said you picked up the bass just for this. Does the music come first or lyrics come first?
It's different. It really, for me, it could be an either or. It could be, usually I'll have a hook get caught in my brain, maybe a chorus of a song, or a lot of times, okay, here's another geek alert. I learned my songwriting from Sting. I was a huge fan of Sting.
Not the least, Sting. Not,
yeah, as a not the wrestler, you know, the asshole. But he, when he's talking about with a song that you always want to work with a metaphor. So a lot of my songs, I'll get this idea of a nice metaphor or an image in my head that I want to, you know, flesh out and try to tell the story around. And that's me, usually, not always.
What about you, Sadie?
Very similar. Usually it'll be sometimes it'll just be a phrase will just pop into my head out of nowhere. And it's just catchy to me for whatever reason. And then I'll spin it from there. Sometimes I literally have no idea where songs come. Like, literally, I don't know how they got there. Like, they just appear. And that's really cool, but mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on with that.
But it's a gift when that happens.
It is amazing. Yeah, it's always like, score.
It's like, oh, here comes a song. Block!
Yep, I can't stop what I'm doing. Yeah, that's fully definitely formed. Happens sometimes. But yeah, it's usually centered on the lyrics for me rather than the music. Usually the music is there in the rhythm of the phrase, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then the actual melody gets built. And sometimes I have to, I feel like that's something I struggle with a lot, is with the melody and the chord structure, because I get really self-conscious about just writing the same song over and over again, melodically speaking, or just writing a song that already exists. So I'm always trying to like shape it in a way that wasn't the natural way that it tried to come out, if that makes sense.
Right. You were giggling at that.
Oh, just because, you know, it's holding yourself to a standard that's ridiculous when you look at the careers of folks like Johnny Cash.
Sure.
Or the entire country music genre.
Right. Yeah, no. But
it's like, the personal challenge.
Yeah. I want to challenge myself to keep that, like, honor that formula that we all know and love. but just make some surprise it.
Mm-hmm. So we alluded to this a little while ago. You have another popular act far removed from the Hate Hell Sisters.
You're so generous.
and it recently ran at the 15th annual Rogue Festival in Northern California. Tell us a little bit about the most unconventional act that the...
I'm going off script here.
Heather Parrish.
Yeah. To drop a name,
drop.
I don't know.
Heather Parrish.
Heather Parrish. Heather Parrish. What's My Call Time, called Extremely Clever, Funny, and Smoothly Performed.
Ooh, I think we're talking about Sinatra.
Yeah.
Well, for those that have not read the whole three glowing reviews that we got, basically the idea is Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin are dead. Spoiler alert. They're in purgatory, and because they lived in a sexist time and perpetuated sexist ways, they have been dropped into the bodies of women, and they are having to figure this out.
Nice.
So the event is a grand concert for the jury of their peers to decide whether they're going to go to heaven or hell.
Now, was this brought about because you wanted to do crooner songs, or because you wanted to be drag queens?
Well, first off, it came about because of my freakishly low man voice. That's that. This summer when we were touring around and going to fringe theater festivals, the drag queen shows would sell out. You'd have a live Barbara Streisand or a live Judy Garland, and they just packed, and my brain started going, why the hell can't we reverse the genders on this? Why can't we have, you know, a drag king show that works like that?
I think it's great. I got to see one of your premiere shows, and it was a lot of fun. Now, Ron and I are both children of Northern California growing up there, so we have to find out, what is the deal with Fresno? You have a huge following there, and I think it's fantastic, but it's such like a random thing of like, it seems to be like your biggest fan base there.
It is super random. Well, not so random. They have an amazing festival. Okay. You mentioned it is the 15th. This year was the 15th year of the Rogue Festival, which is, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the Fringe Festival concept, but it's basically, they happen in cities all over the world, and they are generally 1 to 2 week festivals of independent performing arts of all kinds. And there's the one that's in Fresno has been going strong for 15 years, and it's just this amazing community of people who care about art and care about artists. And in a sort of I haven't spent enough time in Fresno to pretend that I know a lot of statistics about, you know, the economy and the demographic and all that kind of thing. But it seems like there is a bit of a desert landscape there as far as cultural opportunities. And so I really get the sense that the community there that supports this festival really appreciates it and right. really just passionately loves this opportunity. And they recognize that you have to support it. You have to feed it. And so the enthusiasm of these folks is just inspiring. Like, it's amazing.
And they are also just so unique. Anybody that comes from a, you know, this is an exaggeration, a cultural wasteland. Many of us that come from suburbs or, mm-hmm. you know, repressed southern towns or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, feel like we're in the middle of nowhere yeah. with the arts. But it's just that unique hodgepodge of people that are forged in the strangest fires. Mm-hmm. And they're all very unique and very, you know, supportive and just hilarious on yeah. top of it, too.
I often say that visiting Fresno feels like we're in the middle of a Coen Brothers movie. Like, it's in the yes. best way. Like, yeah. it's such a, you just literally never know.
Oh, this last time we were just driving back to the house we were staying at, and there was a dude riding on his bike down the street. Let me see if I can describe
Very
this
visual,
fellow. He was
yeah.
Like a middle-aged African-American man wearing a teal blue three-piece suit on
kind of like LeMay. Like to, LeMay. It was shiny.
To the thing. On, you know,
what month
this,
was this?
The this is
March.
This is okay. in March. On this, warm in you know, BMX. You know, bike or what I call like the DUI bikes, the kind of bikes that you see guys that just can't drive anymore driving while playing a guitar.
What?
Hands free off the handlebars, playing a guitar in this full out suit, on biking down the sidewalk.
On the sidewalk, going against traffic.
Go Fresno.
You hear that, Portland? You're slacking.
Yeah. It was it was such a beautiful sight.
Yeah. That's the deal with Fresno.
Yeah. Well, I love that you guys have that because you're totally deserving of having that fan base.
Thank you. We're not the only ones, though. I mean, it's just the community is just like everyone who goes there has the same experience. Mm-hmm. Just like such a welcoming community.
Awesome. Hey, I think we're going to start closing this out and get Maddie and Maybelle back out of here to be tying up any loose ends in their legend.
Let me go find her. All right, I think I'm back.
All right. Once again, my friends, the famous Haydel sisters.
Thank you so much. This here is a pretty little tune that we wrote that's dedicated to a lot of the joints we've been playing in lately. There's always that one person. It could be a he or she.
Not saying who it is in this room.
Yeah. I know it's me. I know. But nonetheless, this song is dedicated to that woman. This is called She's a Fright. The walls and joints like this have horror stories they can tell. And every port of joy can house a little slice of hell. Still you settle at the bar to take a dip into the well. When you feel your hackles rise because a gaze upon you fell. You catch eyes with the saggy demon that turned to look your way. Your first thought is she must have been a beauty in her day. But whatever road she took in life has led a different way. And etched up on her person is the price of sin she's had to pay. Whoa, she's a fright, she's a sight. She's the kind of thing that haunts you all throughout the night. Creature made of broken dreams. And once you slip into her grip, your only escape is to find a way to skip and evade her tractor beams. But sometimes sadness isn't quite as simple as it seems. She teeters down towards you with what balance she has left. And her classic smile shows she has a taste for crystal meth. And she leans in close to share with you all the reasons why she's so bereft. But your ears are deafened by the stench escaping from her gaping maw of death. Whoa, she's a fright, she's a sight, she's the kind of thing that haunts you all throughout the night. Creature made of broken dreams. And once you've slipped into her grip, your only escape is to find a way to skip and evade her tractor beams. But sometimes sadness isn't quite as simple as it seems. You let her keep on talking about herself in a voice of whiskey baritone. How she was a dancer in New York City till she broke a foot and had to move back home. And it took you back when she mumbled that Dostoevsky wrote her favorite tome. And how every other night for 20 years she comes here and drinks alone. You're a good guy, so you oblige her when she asks you for a dance. But you lose all patience when her hoary claws try to reach into your pants. Now you tell yourself you really tried to give her a chance. But sometimes even a tender heart has got to take a stance. Whoa, she's a fright, she's a sight, she's the kind of thing that haunts you all throughout the night. And bless her heart, she gave it a try. And once you've slipped into her grip, you can't feel guilty about trying to skip. You won't forget until you die. Cause there but for the grace of God go you and I.
All right, so if you happen to be wandering through the great state of Oregon, you can catch the famous Haydel Sisters each and every third Friday every month at the Rialto's Jack London Bar in riveting downtown Portland. Also, check them out on Facebook and at the famoushaydelsisters.com for more information and upcoming shows.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.